as I am changing. Every single move you're making since I've analyzed predictions far beyond the comprehension. I've been tortured with the writhing thoughts that stop a star from shining. Kill me now before I'm sober, so I die before it's over.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Men Insights Podcast. This one is one that I've been trying to get done for a very, very long time. My conversation with Lord Koje, as he is known on all of his social media and on YouTube as well. And we talk a little bit about wrestling, talk a little bit about Snyder Cut, talk a little bit about mental health, talk a lot about mental health. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Koje. No. How are you doing? I mean, like I said, we've been trying to do this for how many years now, and finally getting to do it now?
I don't know. When was Snyder Cut released?
It was only 3 years ago, but it feels like it's been forever at this point. I don't know.
Yeah. Wow, what a trip.
I'm trying to remember, like, what exactly it was that actually got us connected, because I think the first time I became aware of you was seeing the release of Snyder Cut sign on one of the episodes of Monday Night Raw, and when I realized that it was you, around that time we got connected.
That makes sense, because you know we both love Zack Snyder's work and pro wrestling. There's a lot of tie-ins, so yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. How long have you been a wrestling fan?
Probably, I've been on and off though, but I want to say as long as it's been introduced to me. I think the first time I saw it was, I don't know what show it was, but it was either on Saturdays or Sundays on the weekends, WWF in the early 90s. Mm. That's probably when. Maybe, honestly, probably 91. Definitely 91.
I would say, probably around the same time for me, because I think the earliest memory that I have with watching wrestling, I want to say it probably might have been Hogan and Warrior at WrestleMania 6. At least that's what I can remember. But oh, also nice. my dad used to buy me and my brothers the old Coliseum home video best ofs that WWF used to do back then.
Nice. So
I might be remembering some of those, but I think the first one that I remember watching live was either WrestleMania 8 or WrestleMania 9 that I can clearly remember more. I mean, wow. I could ask my brother. He has a better memory about that kind of stuff.
Those are early 90s, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think I used to watch a little bit of WCW around that time, but then fell off for a couple of years, but then got back into WCW during the Monday Night Wars when that ramped up.
Yeah, I think that's when I got into it too. I was a big Mortal Kombat fan. They had the Mortal Kombat Conquest, like a live series that was supposed to be like along the action fantasy vein of Xena Warrior Princess and Hercules when that was popping. They showed on TNT, and after or before WCW was on, and I was like, whoa, what's this? That's when I got into that. Before that, I was watching ECW tapes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I actually started rewatching some of the old ECW from like 1993, watching it on Peacock.
Wow.
And it's like, cause I'd gotten into ECW more like around 96 when it was starting to like really find its identity as like the hardcore alternative. But watching those older ones and seeing the original version of Sandman with the bright neon spandex and playing a surfer gimmick, it's weird, but I'm still into it. I think just because I have that nostalgia for ECW that I'm weirdly into it as dated as it is watching it now. But I think that's what I really love, especially watching the older stuff on there that I would never have thought to see when I was a kid.
I think as fans, we're very like appreciative of the whole art and sport of it. That looking back is just kind of fascinating, because like, oh, there was more of this going on back then, because there's a lot that we missed. We can't see everything.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, and especially like because I've always heard about like Stampede Wrestling. Everyone that knows me as a wrestling fan knows that Bret Hart is my favorite wrestler.
Yep, so, I even know.
Yeah. So, and I've always wanted to watch some of that old Stampede Wrestling, because I've heard like all the old like wrestlers from back from that watch that growing up talking about how great it was and it was innovative and ahead of its time, but I've never gotten to see anything other than highlights from like different Bret Hart and Hart family documentaries, and I don't know if there's there's anywhere that I can watch some of like the full Stampede shows. Do you know if there's anywhere that they have?
I'd have to look. I'm sure we can find some, but if not, at least snippets.
Yeah, because I would have thought that WWE had it on their stuff, but I don't recall that.
Who's the promotion for that?
I think it was just called Stampede Wrestling.
Okay, then.
Yeah. I think I just know it as just Stampede Wrestling or Stu Hart's Stampede Wrestling. It was something like that. I don't remember exactly. I just always heard just when they refer to that territory of wrestling, this is always just Stampede. And that's how everybody knew it as. Because when I was born and got into wrestling, it was at the tail, like basically when the territory days were dying, and it was just as like the golden era of the WWF was really hitting its stride, like late 80s, mm-hmm. early 90s. And that's when I talk to other wrestling fans and debate with on what's like the best time of pro wrestling, that I would say like I've lived through the golden era, New Generation, Attitude Era, Monday Night War, Ruthless Aggression, PG, you know, quote unquote PG era, the what they called the reality era from like 2013 to whatever, and then
that makes sense.
With whatever they're calling the current era of wrestling. And I mean, we've talked about it before that I feel like that we're living in the best era of wrestling right now.
With
WWE, with AEW, with the resurgence of TNA wrestling, now that they're back to being TNA instead of Impact Wrestling.
And then also with people more online, especially during COVID, a lot of people got into CMLL, AAA, Japan.
And MLW Japan was another one that got big for that too.
Yeah, GCW skyrocketed too, I thought.
Yeah.
Because that's when I started noticing more of their work, you know, when I was online more.
Yeah, I think, that was around the time probably when I became aware of it. And I think it was Matt Cardona, when he showed up there, that's when I started to really take notice of it, when he showed up and made everyone think that it was Moxley showing up at the event, but then it was him.
I remember that.
and I think also it was like just before COVID happened. It was when NWA was starting to pick up their momentum again, when they had the NWA Power on YouTube. And I remember talking, saying to other people at that time that I thought that was the best wrestling show going on when it first premiered. And then when COVID hit, all the momentum was just gone like that. And it hurt seeing it go away because of how popular it was becoming, especially with Nick Aldis as champion, and they were getting ready for one of their Crockett Cup around that time when bringing that back. It's been an interesting time for wrestling the last 4 or 5 years now.
But like you said, I agree with you. It's the best time because there's so much of it and so much variety, and I think that's just a good thing all around because then everyone has something to be happy about.
Yeah, there's a little bit of something for everybody. Like if you want the, you know, the polished product of WWE, you have that. If you want something that's more, you know, more geared towards the, I guess, like the indie style, then you have AEW, you have your TNA, your MLWs, and, you know, your local federations. If you have a local indie wrestling federation, make sure you support those because that's what helps keep the business growing. And you never know if you'll see one of those people like on WrestleMania someday, and you can say, "Yeah, I knew you when," kind of thing.
Not just that, but it's really fun. Yeah, since there's no cameras, they don't have to like specifically aim to, you know, cater to one side of the ring, the hard cam as they call it. It's like all around, so there's so much interactiveness going on, which is really cool.
I've been to a few of those smaller shows. Well, I mean, I say smaller, but it was mainly I went to 3 Ring of Honor shows between 2007 and 2008, and then one indie show in 2010 after I moved to North Carolina, and then another one in 2011 when I went to visit family on Staten Island. And actually, the show itself was not that great, but it's a special one for me because I got to meet her name is Sandra. Actually, a couple of years ago became the wife of James Ellsworth. So it was fun getting to actually meet her. And she's very sweet. Really, she's a big Disney fan, which I appreciate because I love Disney as well.
And you got that bond.
Yeah, and it's just I mentioned on one of our earlier podcasts, like when I just first started, when some of like the allegations, some people started saying stuff about Ellsworth, that she reached out to me to tell me the truth about the whole thing, to kind of just dispel all the rumors that were going around, and I reported on that for her, which, you know, I appreciate that she trusted me enough to get that information out there. So she knows that I, you know, that she has my support in that, at least. I think with all this, like the non-WWE shows that I've been to, which really I haven't been to that many WWE shows either. I've only been to three, but they were all great shows. But I would say the show I had the most fun at was the one I went to in 2010, because that one I got to meet Mickey James, and that one was just so much fun, because I got to be inside the ring with her and take a picture with her.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
Yeah. It was like
I didn't know that bit. I know you met her.
It was at the local rec center in the town that I was living in at the time. And it was Jacksonville, North Carolina, just outside of Camp Lejeune, where AJ Styles was born. And I learned that after he made his WWE debut, which is just funny to me that how wrestling has such a strong presence in that little bitty town that I didn't even know existed until I moved there.
That's awesome.
And how many of the wrestling shows that you've been to? Because I know you've been to a lot. You've been to indie shows. You've been to AEW, WWE shows. And because I remember seeing the Restored to the Snyderverse sign from Dynamite.
Year. That was, I think, 2 years ago. Because right. The Restored to the Snyderverse one, that was in Chicago when CM Punk took his first L against MJF.
Right.
I was in shock. I was he lost in his hometown. But I think he did it on purpose. What was really cool, though, you could see MJF, like, you know, go over him after he got the pin. And, you know, they do that whisper thing. It looked like MJF said, thank you so much or something. And then, you know, CM Punk said, you got this, kid, you know, or something like that. There was some quick exchange. And I thought that was just amazing. But
I think I remember that a lot. Mm. Like, what was No, I was just saying, like, what was like the your favorite show so far that you've been to?
I think it's Super J Cup, New Japan. They were doing their tournament. They had the finals in Long Beach, and that's not far from me. So that was the best, because I got to see so many. Because it was a tournament, and the tournament is open door, so a lot of luchadores from Mexico come over too. Because New Japan really loves lucha libre, and so a lot of those guys so went in there. So the finals were ELP versus Mystico, who is, I think it was going by Caristico at the time. It's hard. But that's who you know as Sin Cara. So he was in the finals, but also in the first match, Will Ospreay versus ELP was the semifinals. Will Ospreay, like, spilled into our crowd, and then he stood on my chair, and real quick he said, I'm so sorry, man. And I said, no, it's okay, I got you. Really quick, and when you watch it, it looks like there was no conversation at all. That's how fast they talk. But he was like standing right here, and I was like, oh, I'm close to Will Ospreay, and he was awesome. He's like a real life Captain America, doing all the flips, tricks, and kicks you in the face. But I got to see Naito wrestle, so many people. I got to meet Jushin Thunder Liger, who's
that's awesome.
Great. Yeah, he was on like the table next to us calling the match. And people were like, oh shoot, can we go up there and say, hey, can you take a picture? Hey, how you doing? He's like, yeah, sure. It was so cool. There was like no bodyguards around him, but then it's not as popular on the side for issues to happen. So I just have to say that's the best show I've ever gone to, just for the whole experience, the talent, everything all around was just good.
That's really cool. Yeah, that Liger is another one that I'd always heard the name, knew who he was, but I never got to actually watch any of his matches. I think until probably either when I got the WWE Network and got to watch some of the older WCW stuff, or when I got to see him fight Tyler Breeze at one of the takeovers, and when he had that match with him, and which, I mean, that was cool, especially for Tyler Breeze that they trusted him enough to have the match with someone on the level of Jushin Thunder Liger, and. Was that his first and only WWE match? Because I really don't
remember. I don't remember his in and outs. I remember seeing him in WCW. That's when I first heard of
him. Yeah, because I think, at least in the U.S., his matches with Brian Pillman is what kind of put the cruiserweight division on the map at the time. But it was the light heavyweight division, then became cruiserweight like around 94, 95, I think. I don't know, because I remember it was like a day where I was just fascinated by learning about the history of the Cruiserweight division from WCW that I just went into like deep dive mode and just learned all that little stuff.
Isn't it great we could do that with all these divisions and all this history?
Yeah, I love learning the history of wrestling. That's and especially like when I learn like some of the connections that other wrestlers have had with each other, like either just like, oh, they had this match with this person this time, or even finding out when some of them are related.
I was wrong. It was ELP versus Dragon Lee, not Carisco. Carisco was eliminated early on. I got my guys mixed up. Totally. My apologies, gods of Lucha Libre and pro wrestling. But yeah, it was Dragon Lee. Because you were seeing someone was like, wait a second.
Oh, that's cool.
Carisco was there. He was eliminated in the first round, I think, by Dragon Lee. I have to rewatch it.
Well, I mean, it's cool that you got to see him before he, you know, hit it big with WWE and seen so much trust they put into him in just the past year.
Is so good, though. Yeah. He is so good.
He really is. He's another one that I was familiar with the name and who he was, but then I never got to see his work until he showed up on NXT last year. And then it was just like, oh, okay. This is why Triple H and Shawn Michaels were interested in him.
Yeah, he did show up on AEW once or twice.
Yeah.
He was in for that Trios tournament, the first round.
Right, right.
I forgot who he was up against.
I forgot who it was that I was looking at, like trying to find their information. I think it was when I looked up Thea Hale for some whatever it was that I was doing this morning. Saw that she either her or somebody else wrestled under a different name, like on a couple episodes of Dynamite as well. It was somebody that's on NXT right now that I read that they wrestled a few matches on Dynamite, but I don't remember which one of them it was. And it was just fascinating seeing that too. And speaking of AEW, at the clinic that I was working at a couple of years ago when I first moved down here in Florida, that it was actually a female wrestler. I don't remember what her name was, but she was wearing an AEW t-shirt and I complimented her on the shirt and she was handing me this paperwork because she needed to get a physical, and it was the paperwork was for the WWE Performance Center. And then when I looked up her name just out of curiosity, and I saw that she had had a few matches on Dynamite and on AEW Dark, like, oh, well, that's cool. I got to meet someone that's wrestled on TV. That's cool.
Nice. One of my buddies, Price Howdy, he and Leroy were on AEW Dark, you know, because they used to have a lot of indie guys go there. Mm-hmm. My buddy Dino Winwood, he has this cowboy thing and all this, and Leroy is this big chunky lovable guy, and he's very comedic and he loves taking bumps and pain. So he was also on that talent show. What was it called? The one that Cody Rhodes was hosting on TBS with Ahsoka and I forget if Snoop Dogg first season or something. But anyways, it was that show.
Yeah,
they also performed on there too.
yeah, I know the show. I just can't remember what the name is. I know somewhere in the name I think it's something with Big Show, but I don't remember exactly what the full name was.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, my bad.
It's probably gonna just pop into my head randomly, like 3 hours from now when I'm trying to sleep. Like it'll be like at two in the morning. I'll just jolt out of bed, like, oh, that was the name.
That's why I'm happy I said, oh, it was Dragon Lee, not Christopher. He was there too. But otherwise, that would have jumped out of my head. I was like, no, that was wrong.
Yeah, I had something like that similar to me happen a few years ago. For whatever reason, I was thinking about Dennis Leary for something one day, and I couldn't remember then, and I couldn't place the name, but then just randomly on a car ride somewhere, it just popped into my head. Oh, Dennis Leary. That's what I was thinking about. And nobody in the car knew what the context was of me saying that.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I've been there.
All right, so this is something that I was curious about, and I've been, you know, I'm glad that we're finally getting to talk about it. Like, how did you get involved with the Snyder Cut stuff? Because that journey and the momentum of all that started when the Justice League, or the Abomination, as I like to call it, was released in 2017. And like, how did you get involved with that?
Well, at first I fooled myself that it was an okay movie, but yeah, you know,
I did too.
I even saw it a few times in theaters, and I was like, no, we should, maybe it's good. It's got some, there's a good movie in there. It's just, then I realized I was doing too many mental gymnastics. I was like, all right, I'll just wait for a director's cut, because I was confident. I had the feeling that I thought there was respect for the director, Zack Snyder, to have a director's cut come out, because we've had some of his director's cuts come out.
Yeah.
Then as we got to know him, not even this director's cut of Sucker Punch has come out. And so I was under the blind faith or assumption, whatever you want to call it, that the director's cut was going to come out. Then after a while, I was like, doesn't seem like this director's cut is coming out. What? Then I started going online, saw Fiona's stuff and a bunch of other people's stuff. And then I just started just being vocal about it, because it's like, let me help where I can. And everything was just kind of organic, really. And I've been trying to make a gaming YouTube channel for like 8 years now. And I was like, all right, let me just use whatever I have to help in whatever way. And a lot of stuff like San Diego is like, this is quite a bit of a hour's drive away from me. So I was like, all right, I'll go with that. I'll just show up and help out where I can. And it was lucky that Snyder was at Pasadena Art Center a lot, because I was a student there in high school for a high school program or whatever, a summer thing or whatever. And was it summer? I don't remember. But anyways, so it's all these things are kind of local to me. So I lucked out in that way to show up to certain things. And that figure for the wrestling thing, I was like, yo, everyone brings signs. I saw a sign at a SmackDown show where one dude was, the sign said Hello Kitty is better than John Cena, and I was like, that is very random, that's very original, and if he could say that, I could say Restore the Snyderverse or Release the Snyder Cut. So I figured that'd be a platform, and I went to like, I think 7 WWE shows. A lot of times it didn't get caught in camera. So I was like, all right, let me push a little bit, get closer to camera and try. Then a few times it did. So everything else was just an effort. Anything I think anyone would have done. So it just organically happened probably around 2018, towards the end of there. 2019, I got really, really active. No, 18. Yeah. It's all on my Instagram.
Yeah, because I would say for me, like when I was... Yeah, like just like you, like when I saw it in the movie in theaters, like pretty much, well, I don't want to say everybody, but most people that I know of at least tried convincing ourselves that, oh yeah, that was still Zack's movie. You know, it still had, you know, Zack's touch to it. But then just the more times that I'd watched it since then, and I would say from between then and then when the Snyder Cut did finally come out, and I think I'd watched it maybe 3 times. The first time was seeing it in theaters, because I, you know, pre-ordered the ticket, was excited for a year and a half at that point to finally go see the movie after seeing Batman vs. Superman, and then especially watching the Ultimate Edition, which again, unanimously, pretty much from what I've seen, why did they not release that version in theaters? I don't know.
Mm.
And then when I saw it again the second time on a, you know, on a torrent site for my birthday, because I was just at the time too cheap to actually go see it in theaters again. That's when I started to really pay attention more to everything that was very clearly not his. And then when I saw when the home video release for it came out, because they kept promoting, oh, additional scenes, and it was literally just 2 scenes, which even those scenes were not completely what they were supposed to be, which we would have later on find out.
And they didn't even put them in the movie.
Yeah. And then when I finally watched the again on the Blu-ray, which anyone who saw the live stream that I did of that movie, you saw that I shattered those discs right after, and then had a lot of fun with that. But when I watched it again that third time, that's when it finally clicked with me, like, wow, this is not his movie. This at least 80% of his stuff was completely cut out. And then that's when I started like doing all the deep dives of stuff coming out, saw different YouTubers that were talking about it, which I don't even remember how I found those people, but I still, like, there was like Chris Wong Swenson, comic movie marks, I think was the first.
I think we all at one point, Chris Wong was the guy at one point where we all listened to him for hope.
Like him, then comic movie marks. Then I got into Film Junkie for a little bit after that. Then I started seeing other YouTubers that were talking about it. And then that's when I eventually joined Vero the first time and started seeing all the storyboard images and all the unfinished VFX images that Zach was posting on there, and like, oh, there's a lot more to this than
Zach's Barrel is the best place to go, you know.
When I joined Vero, he was the reason I joined, when I realized, like, okay, this is his preferred social media platform. Okay, cool. And at that point, I'd already decided he was my favorite director, because every movie I'd seen of his, I was not disappointed. Even the theatrical version of Batman vs. Superman, I still enjoyed. I saw it twice within a 2-week period. And then, of course, again, Ultimate Edition, when that came out, I've never watched the theatrical version ever since then.
Hey, you can't go back. It's just why.
And then I finally saw Dawn of the Dead. I didn't see the theatrical version, only the unrated version, which, I don't know what the difference is, and I'm okay with that. Because I think the first movie of his I ever actually watched was 300, and that was on the DVD. But then the first movie I saw in theaters of his was The Legends of the Guardians, Owls of Ga'Hoole. And I got to see that in 3D, the real D3D, and that was just one of the most mesmerizing experiences I'd ever had. And especially in 2010, all the other movies that I saw that year, that I saw them also in 3D, like saw Toy Story 3 in 3D, which even all these years later, as much as I love The Legends of the Guardians, Toy Story 3 was still my favorite movie of 2010. And Inception was another one I saw that year that blew my mind. And yeah, pretty much every movie I saw that year was just an amazing movie. But top three were Toy Story 3, Inception, Legends of the Guardians, at least for me. Then seeing all the other stuff that he was posting about, that Darkseid was supposed to be in it, that his version of Steppenwolf was supposed to be more in line with the scene that was teasing the Ultimate Edition of BVS.
Right.
And just, and I wanted to believe that Joss Whedon had his heart in the right place when he did his reshoots. But then, of course, everything we've heard about him since then, realizing just how much of a scumbag he really was and still is, as far as I know, because I haven't seen anything from him since the stuff with Ray Fisher came out, so I don't know. And
I just find it's a dodgy situation, like the project to remake someone else's film with their footage and change it and alter it into another film. That just seems kind of dirty business altogether. And looking back, seeing how people were quick to relish in that, it was just, to me, that was telling and bothersome. And
yeah,
like this is the tragedy is, like, all right, superheroes, usually these stories where we not just entertained by epic action and, you know, sci-fi storytelling or mythical whatever you do, but there's this there's this theme of good and bad and making right decisions and wrong decisions, so there's a sense of morality that goes in there. And then you see that the makers of this kind of their own morality of making this is thrown out the window or something. And it feels like it's just kind of hypocritical and damaging. So that's why I really also want the artist to speak, because everything else seemed like against what heroes would go for. And then we see how toxic a lot of people have become because of it. It's kind of like my team's better than your team, or this is the way, and then da da da.
Yeah, that's why I've distanced myself from a lot of interactions with a lot of people that I did associate myself with at that time. You know, whether it was like,
don't name anyone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna name specific people. Just, I mean, if you were as deep into the movement as we were, you know who we would be talking about. You know, the people on this
side. It's kind of documented on social media, anyways.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I'm just glad to be over it.
I mean, I would say maybe a very, very small handful of them I do still talk to occasionally, but not as often. And because for me, it was like after the movie finally came out, I was ready to, embrace the future of Zach on Netflix and just, I don't know, just, it's been just, I guess I would also kind of equate it to like how I feel about with wrestling in certain ways. So when like the more stuff that keeps coming out about Vince McMahon and all that, it's like it makes it harder for me to admit that I'm a wrestling fan. And
no, I don't think so, because he's his own guy, and however he did his own business was his choice. It doesn't affect like how many people who are wrestling in WWE or anywhere else are trying to give it their best and do something special. I don't think one apple should ruin the whole bunch, you know?
I mean,
just take that apple out and throw it away.
I mean, I agree with that. It's just like, especially like because I've been more active on Threads because I'm not on Twitter at all anymore, which I'm glad that I'm not on there because
I think that's healthier.
Yeah, and I've been on Threads a lot more the last few months and just starting to see more people on there that are, they have the mentality that if you continue to support WWE, then you support Vince McMahon and everything he did. And it's just like, no, I'm supporting the people that are still putting on a great product. I'm not supporting the man that, for all intents and purposes, kind of almost ruined the product with the stuff that he was doing. When he retired in 2022 and Triple H took over, there was still the little bit of elements of the McMahon influence on there, but it was still Triple H giving the approval of everything. And, you know, and it was, the momentum was good. And then when he weaseled his way back in there after WrestleMania 39, and we started to see things shift back to the McMahon way. I mean, Triple H was still stirring the ship, but it was still the McMahon influence on there that just left such a disgusting taste in a lot of people's mouths. And
but even before that, on and off, when Triple H is doing his best, every now and then someone else would step in and start, you know, overdoing it. And then you'd see a shift. You'd feel it too. It'd go on and off.
Especially with like all the great work that Triple H was doing with when he was still head of NXT, and then when his NXT people would come up to Raw or SmackDown, and just you would see how Vince would treat those people, like
almost like they lost their powers in some areas.
Yeah, I would say the best example would be when Asuka was brought up to the main roster, and yeah, she had the momentum those first few months, but then after her loss to Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania 34, it's like she just went downward after that and didn't really get to pick up again until I'd say maybe 2 years ago.
I feel because one of my sisters is a huge Asuka fan and she's like, I can't do this anymore, they ruined my girl, because Asuka got her back into wrestling, because me and my sisters are huge wrestling fans and huge CM Punk fans. Like we went to a Raw that CM Punk was at, we got as close as we could, we had the matching shirts, we even went to I even bought boxing wraps for our hands and we put X's on them, you know. We were there and then my sisters were yelling at kids who were cheering for John Cena, and they were like, CM Punk. I was like, dang, my sisters are vicious, they don't care. But we all kind of took a break from wrestling when he was fired and we were like, oh, that's messed up. So it's been an up and down thing, but
yeah, I've had my moments of like that too.
Yeah, so again, looking back, I've kind of been there, and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Someone ruined the whole thing. But then I came back to it. I'm like, you know, I want to kind of learn from this lesson, not let one, like I said earlier, one bad apple ruin the whole bunch, because I started looking at it as a whole, and there's more good than bad. Just like we could look at anything. Sometimes the bad is so appalling in any situation, like, let's say, the comics, Joss Whedon or Warner Brothers, or who's in charge of this now, or Vince McMahon. It does hurt because it ruins something that we go to that gives us such joy and escapism. And, you know, we have that fantasy and love and that hurrah of enjoying the story and the performance that's going on, all these characters. And when there's like a stain, it kind of ruins the whole thing. But I think maybe part of that is us saying, oh, accepting everything has to be perfect or whatever. But it like one little crack should really ruin the whole image that we see, which is actually there's more talent, more beauty, more heart going on, and just kind of learn to get out of it or fix it and then move on or appreciate what we got, you know, because there's a flow of generations coming in of new wrestlers, new artists, new talent, new heroes, new directors. And, you know, if we take the good and keep doing the best with what we got today going forward, I think it's just more encouraging that way than to go, it's all ruined now. So I don't know. It's a process, but I think there's more to love than a little problem. I just hope the problems get resolved. And if not, go a better route.
I hope so too. I really do. It's I see a lot of people, just so many people on Threads that once the details of the McMahon situation were coming out, that they just now, you know, are of that mentality, that everyone that's still in the company, they know more than what they're saying, get rid of all of them. And it's like, it's just not, it's really not that simple. I mean,
I don't believe in collective punishment. That's messed up. That's really what it is with all this.
Yeah. Because I mean, there's people that I still follow on there, and because I've been cordial with them, I've been good, but it's just I keep seeing so many. One in particular, I'm not going to name names, but you know, if you're on as active on Threads with the same people, then you'll probably know who it is. That is just very adamant that Triple H knows more than what he's saying, and he should be fired. And it's like, oh, so you want them to get rid of Triple H and then watch the quality of the show decline just so that you can have more people accountable?
I see what you mean. Like, people are bloodthirsty. They just want to take everybody out or something.
I kind of understand it, though, because it's like, yeah, there probably are still people there that might know more. We just don't know yet because we don't know who was named in those documents because, you know, it's an active investigation going on, so they're not going to release everything to the public like that because, I mean, really, they're not obligated to. It's, you know, by law, really, but like, because we just really already know Vince and Laurinaitis are the two main culprits in all of this, and they are already gone, so it's just a matter of what comes as a result of that. But I mean, like, are you of the belief that there are more people still there that might know more than what they're letting
Oh, yeah, probably. I mean, even in the future when we get a huge two-parter Dark Side of the Ring story of all this stuff coming out, I don't think we'll even know the full truth then.
Yeah. I mean, they could probably make a whole season of Dark Side of the Ring of just Vince McMahon.
You know, it'd be really like a Game of Thrones mixed with Downtown Abbey, but wrestling. It was just the McMahons, their whole tragic life or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, because this is just one of many things that people know
Vince. Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. Because there's his connection to the Jimmy Snuka situation that they covered that on Dark Side of the Ring as well. And the steroid scandal, of course, was another big one. And other people that have come and gone that he's done things to. And, you know, like, you know, Montreal Screwjob, although, you know, there's the people that are on the side of that being a work, which, I mean, as I've gotten older, I'm kind of starting to wonder, like, was that a legit situation? Because I don't know so much anymore, but, you know, I don't know.
Sometimes, I don't know, think you can tell when things go, or maybe you can't. It's just hard.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those situations that even back then, I was 10 years old at the time, and even back then, when I still had just that little bit of belief that that what I was watching was real, even in that moment, I was like, that was not supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you could see more of how pro wrestling works, because it's really much like a dance, like in salsa, you move the girl's arm here, she knows she's going to turn, you or there's this body movements you do, and they know how to follow just by the rules of conduct of the movement vocabulary, and pro wrestling has a lot of that. So when things go astray and then people lose their cool, you find out about later, or sometimes you can see it, or sometimes it just happens in a brief blink of an eye, you miss it. It's pretty crazy. It's more technical than we think. So I think there can be a lot of complications going on, even with one match, but I like to believe and hope that everyone's focusing on the professional part. You know, mistakes happen, you know, or whatever. Yeah. But it's just really something that should be addressed and stopped when people are abusing their power to use the talent and then to do something else. You know, you just got to put your foot down on, you know, what's ethically right and wrong. And, you know, that person will hopefully be replaced with someone who does care about employees and the work that they're doing and the show and the performance and everything.
Yeah. You know,
just over the best for the show and everybody. Cause everyone, if WWE haters would have WWE go away, or if AEW haters would have AEW go away, or fill in the blank, coming this far would be bad to do any of that, because this is a lot of work, a lot of talent can have. And again, everyone can have something that they want. And I think the art of pro wrestling and all these people having more places to go and showcase their talent, what they dream of, is a huge plus. Just like you said, it's probably the best era of pro wrestling to be in, because there's so much.
Yeah. Yeah. And really, like, any fan, well, I say fan, if you want one company to fail, then you're not really a fan of wrestling. You're a fan of the brand, not the business. Because although I will admit, even during the Monday Night War, I was diehard WWF all the way, but but I never wanted WCW to close shop because I enjoyed having my.
Well, that was an interesting marketing ploy that actually helped both brands in a way. Yeah. But at that time, that was okay, I think.
Yeah, because I enjoyed having my Nitro that I could watch during commercial breaks of Monday Night Raw, and vice versa, and having my WCW Thunder on Wednesdays when I can then I can watch SmackDown on Thursdays. That's why I'm happy that AEW Dynamite and Rampage and Collision exist, because then I get Raw, NXT, Dynamite, SmackDown, Rampage, Collision, like all this wrestling in 1 week. You know, whether I enjoy the show from top to bottom, probably 9 times out of 10 I won't, but I will at least enjoy most of it. You know, because there's, like I've said before, there's something for everybody on every show, and like you can have your over the top Timeless Tony Storm gimmicks, or you can have your serious Blackpool Combat Club. You can have, you can have your funny segments with R-Truth. You can have your, strong style of wrestling with Shinsuke or Gunther. You know, something for everybody, and I love that. And I think that's another post I even said on Threads. It doesn't matter if it's WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, NWA, New Japan. I love pro wrestling. That's me.
Hey, that's beautiful. That I think that's the way to be, man. I was going to say something, but totally forgot. It'll come back to me, I hope. If not, I'll message you when it happens. Something about wrestling. I remembered it. I think back then it was crazy because unless you had a VCR and VHS tapes that were blank like I did, the 8-hour ones that would break easier over time, the play would be slower. You would record one and watch the other. I would record WCW because I was recording Mortal Kombat Conquest. So I was like, all right, let that go and watch wrestling. But now everyone has the technology and DVR space. You can just watch it all, really.
Yeah, you have DVR, you have like some of the streaming stuff that you can get streaming some of that stuff. I mean, like I know like WWE has Peacock, but if you want to watch an episode of Raw or SmackDown, you got to wait a whole month for an episode to upload.
Yeah, because I remember the network would post it the following day. I always thought you had the network and you could watch it live and it would extend after. Maybe they did that time. I don't know, but I was like,
I think they did. Yeah, if not the next day, at least like maybe like a week later, you were able to watch it. But I know with NXT, they would always have NXT on there the very next day to watch, which is funny that they would do it for NXT, but not for Raw and SmackDown, which doesn't make any sense to me. But I mean, with Raw going to Netflix next year, that'll be an interesting new avenue for them of having.
Because I think AEW is going to HBO Max, right? Or something like that.
I mean, I've been waiting for them to make that announcement because, I mean, I love watching the show and the few pay-per-views of theirs that I've watched. I've enjoyed all of them. Like, I enjoyed All In from last year. Oh, I love AEW. But, like, I feel like because, like, as much as I love watching the few pay-per-views of theirs that I've seen, I'm not really willing to spend, like, $60 or $70 a month to watch the pay-per-views because... I have other stuff that I pay for. Like, I have my...
Yeah, we got to juggle.
Yeah, like, I got Peacock, Disney Plus. I have my Apple Music and other stuff that I got to pay for every month. And having that added expense would just be a little too much. So if they were able to get the streaming on Max or somewhere else where they can have, like, episodes of Dynamite and Collision and Rampage and then having their pay-per-views on there, that would be... that would get the AEW fans... to subscribe to those services, so the people that own those services get the money that way, and then AEW fans have their AEW content all in one spot that they can go back to if they didn't previously order the pay-per-views through like Fight TV or anywhere else like that, or Bleacher Report or wherever else that they have them.
Yeah, but Bleacher Report is kind of cool because you actually keep it, you have your own digital library, and I appreciate it. I didn't realize that until I made an account. I was like, oh cool, I can rewatch these. So yeah, I don't know if streaming is necessary. If the streaming would be cheaper than me, using my digital TV services like Sling or YouTube TV, that would be good. Yeah, that's the only benefit I see there.
Yeah, because I used to have,
but it has to be live.
I used to have Impact Plus when it was still Impact.
And
I remember it. It was enjoying that a lot as well because getting to watch some of the older TNA wrestling pay per views that either I'd watched them live at the time or just had like would like buy the DVDs for them. because I didn't watch. I used to watch the Impact Wrestling when it was on Spike TV every week. Like that was like my new, you know, WCW experience, and I loved watching it. And some of the DVDs that I had, I mean, like I mentioned to you with the On the Ring of Honor the video that I had, where I had that I got the Best of AJ Styles of TNA DVD from there. That I also had was Bound for Glory 2006.
Oh wait, that's a good one. That's with Sting in the main event.
Yeah, Sting and Jeff Jarrett.
And that was the first Women's Royal Rumble, really, in America.
Yeah, it was.
But like, the Women's Impact title that Gail Kim won, huh?
Yeah, and then there was Lockdown 2007 that I saw. That was a really good one. Slammiversary 2007 was another one that I had. Oh, yeah, and Turning Point 2006 was another one that it was with a Kurt Angle Samoa Joe Part 2. That was a really good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't watch a lot of the TNA pay-per-views live. Only a handful of them I watched live. But even if like the weekly show was not great, they always delivered on the pay-per-views. Is what I remember. Yeah, and they've been uploading a lot of their pay-per-views on the YouTube channel, so I'm able to rewatch them.
I noticed that. Yeah. I was watching that first ever Women's Royal Rumble, which is a work of art to me, man. That was so beautiful seeing Asuka win and all the people come back and Brie. Oh, that one is just a hoorah from beginning to end. And then starting with Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks, that's just awesome.
Yeah,
that's the one I saw. I was on YouTube. I was like, "Oh, I'm watching this now."
Yeah,
I mean, I had the DVD, but
yeah,
it's kind of cool.
Because I can pull it up on Peacock anytime I want. But having the, you know, quick little convenience, like if I'm at work and I have like a 1 hour lunch break to kill time, I'll just pull out my phone, go on YouTube, and watch one of these matches real quick. Which a lot of times actually that is what I end up doing when I have those longer lunch breaks, or if I have extra time to kill before I have to start my shift. Yeah, I like having that extra convenience of, because the indie show that I went to in 2010, they had a DVD release that I never took advantage of.
Oh, they did?
From High Spots, and I'm mad at myself for not getting it. But one of the matches, and I think I mentioned it on one of the shows, on one of my previous episodes, that they have one of the matches uploaded onto their YouTube channel. That it was El Generico and Paul London against two local guys that I can't remember their names, and actually, if during certain camera angles, you can actually see me sitting in the audience, which is, you know, kind of a cool for me.
That I love that moment. That. You're like, hey, I'm part of the story.
Yeah, but it's just, and I have that match saved on one of the playlists that I have on YouTube, and it's just, I wish I could rewatch that entire show because it was a really good show. Because they also had a Tommy Dreamer versus Necro Butcher, which was really cool. Shelton Benjamin versus Christopher Daniels.
Hey.
And the main event was Mickey James versus Amber O'Neil. Anyone who might not be familiar with Amber O'Neil, she's actually the ex-wife of Luke Gallows. And she used to follow me on my old Twitter account too. So that was fun. Yeah. I remember actually a lot of wrestlers used to follow me on my old account, which I do miss that part of it, but I'm happy to not be on Twitter anymore.
I was going to tag you for Snack and Fire. So like, where are you? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
but it's all good. It's better to be awake because I don't know. There's more toxicity in that area.
Yeah, that's why I'm happy to not be there anymore. Because it was back in June of last year that I, except for Facebook, I deleted all my social media. I only kept Facebook because I have a lot of family on there. But I deleted Twitter and my old Instagram, Snapchat, my old Vero, all of that, and took a 4 or 5 month break. And then rejoined everything again, like October, November, because I was, you know, focusing on my mental health at the time because I was going through a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think you need to do that. It's good to, you know, just like food sometimes, or with your diet, we need to have like an intermittent fast or something, just to give time to detox because it's just so much going in. Sometimes you need a break. And I think emotionally, spiritually, and mentally, you need that too. So whatever you got to do, you got to take these breaks, man. It's healthy.
Yeah, especially I feel like not enough people give the proper care to their mental health. Like, I forgot who it was, like what interview or thing that I was listening to or watching, where they were saying like that, you know, like, oh, like if you're sick, you go to the doctor. If you have a cold, you cough or whatever, you go to the doctor for this, for that. But you know, when your brain is not good, you know, why don't you go to the doctor for that? And I think when they said that, I was like, yeah, that's true. Like, why don't people take better care of their mental health? It's always about the physical health, which even then, a lot not enough people take care of that either. Mm-hmm. But mental health, like, because, you know, and my brother even kind of said, you know, like the saying, you know, mind, body, soul, because what affects your mind will affect your body, and that affects your soul, and vice versa. And I've been using, like, on when I post certain mental health stuff, and I'll put the hashtag, well, two hashtags. I'll put mental health is physical health is mental health.
I like that. That's cool. Yeah, because there's a negative stigma, and I like your shirt, Break the Stigma. I have one of those. Yeah. especially in, you know, culture in my family growing up, like to see a therapist or like a psychiatrist is just considered like you're crazy from the get-go. It's like there's a negative stigma on getting help with it too altogether. So
yeah,
it's something that I feel is very easily taken for granted, maybe because there's a lot of, you could look into any avenue, there's a lot of things meant to distract us and get money from us, you know, like commercialization, materialism, and then we're so busy, oh, this will make you happy if you invest in this or something like that, and they downplay what really matters, you know, maybe going for a walk, watching the sunrise, breathing fresh air for a bit, you know, reading a book and chill. I mean, there's a lot of things that get put down because I guess mental health isn't that sexy or something.
Right.
But yeah.
And that's why I get mad at the media, like when it's like a mass shooting or it's like a big tragedy like that, that's when they always say like, oh, we need to look at mental health. Or when something happens to a celebrity, like if they, you know, I'm not gonna say committed, that they died by suicide, that, and they say, oh, we need to look at mental health, needs to take a look at mental health in America. But then once that story is not the flavor of the week anymore, the conversation is gone.
Right. And then we spend months on two celebrities having a divorce case.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, come on, people. It's very unhealthy mental situation. That's why I think with mental health, you got to think like a martial artist. You have to be aware of your surroundings, but also be aware of taking care of yourself. So it's like two things. So not everybody's going to be compassionately or empathetic towards you, you know, and you got to be able to look at those signs and know how to protect yourself in the ways of removing yourself from the conversation or going somewhere else or avoiding this or avoiding conflict or addressing things in a healthy manner and taking breaks like you did, or like what we all have to do every now and then. I've done it a few times too with social media, just take a break, do something else productive and give yourself peace. And, you know, take care of what really matters with our mental health. Because sometimes the addiction of, you know, checking our phones every time or be on social media, sometimes we're practicing distraction techniques and running away from problems or pushing off some things because we want like a quick fake dopamine rush by like being entertained all the time at the tips of our fingers without giving time to like focus on, all right, stuff I need to focus on or make time for to make me happy or in a healthy way, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a lot.
Yeah, it's funny that how you mentioned before about, you know, like the cultural part of it, like, oh, you know, going to therapy, blah, 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 that makes me crazy, because it made me think about in AJ Lee's book that's what her father's mentality was when it came to that kind of stuff. And then, you know, here seeing how open she was about her experience with her mental health and her mom's mental health. Have you read her book?
No, I haven't actually.
It's a really good book. I would definitely recommend it. And anyone who's not familiar with it, it's called Crazy Is My Superpower, which I know it sounds like it's making light of it, but that's just her, because she's you know, nerdy, like, you know, a lot of people are, which, you know, whether they want to admit it or not, everyone's a nerd in their own form. And I don't want to say like she's embracing the crazy, but it's just she's owning her mental health is what it means. And that's why she calls it that. I don't know if she's said that exactly, but that's my interpretation of it from reading her book so many times and seeing how much of an advocate for mental health that she's become as well. So, but yeah, that's definitely one that I would recommend. And yeah, she's very, very open about, you know, especially the way how the healthcare field, how they mishandle treating mental health. Because she talked about how when her mom started having symptoms for stuff, that they gave her the wrong medication that actually exacerbated her symptoms. And yeah, that they thought that it was just like basic depression, anxiety, but then finding out that she had bipolar disorder and the medication that they were giving her made the symptoms even worse, and that the exact same thing ended up happening to her too. So it's just like,
sorry, man.
Yeah. And it actually kind of makes me wonder, because the medication I used to be on from when I had been diagnosed with, at the time, it was the way my therapist at the time described it, severe anxiety, severe depression, severe panic disorder. and the medications I was on at the time just made that I don't remember exactly which medications they were, that, or if it was the combination of medications, just I didn't like the way I felt when I was taking them. Specifically, I remember there was two that I did take. There was trazodone to help for to sleep, and then Xanax, they told me to take it as needed when I would have some, like, sorry, whatever panic attack. Oh, you're fine. But there was like one night that I took both because I was feeling especially anxious, and that night took both of them, and I was asleep for almost 15 hours.
Whoa.
And when that happened, like, I can't do this anymore. I'm not doing this ever again. And I haven't been on any medication since then. And then when I started seeing another therapist again last year, and I even said to them that ideally I would like to avoid being put on medication, but if it is deemed necessary, I am open to it.
How do you feel now? Because you seem a lot more comfortable in being you, if that makes sense. I feel like you're comfortable in your skin.
I feel like I've gotten a lot better with it. I've learned to, like as you said before, being aware of surroundings, that I'm a lot more aware of that. I'm more open to talking to people about how I'm feeling and what's going on with me, and especially with family, because I used to be so resistant to talking to family about a lot of stuff like that. But I've been, because I live with my brother and his partner now, so I've been having these conversations with them more and more, and opening up more and more, which really that's that. And just, you know, taking that time to, you know, just take a deep breath, go for a nice walk, enjoy the weather, having somebody to talk to, or just rather they listen, just to listen to you say what you need to say. A lot of times that is really all we need. Just having somebody to vent your feelings and your frustrations to,
yeah,
you know, letting it all out, releasing what you've been holding on to. A lot of times that is really what we all need.
And yeah, then, I was thinking of when I was doing dishes about feelings, and I was squeezing the sponge. I was like, yo, I think a lot of things we hold on to, like we are like a sponge. Just got to squeeze out the stuff that doesn't being there. And, hey, we're fresh for new stuff. I don't know. We just can't hold things inside because I think it eats at us, man.
It does,
Even like neurologically, because our feelings speak to our nervous system that feeds our organs. That's why when we're scared or sad or stressed, you know, we or super scared, nervous, or we sweat and it's a cold sweat, or our blood pressure rises. And when we feel good and love, there's antitoxins going on because our emotions speak to our nervous system, speaks to our organs. So like, and depending where all that energy goes affects different things. Anger through the nervous system affects the liver. What do people do when we're angry? We drink alcohol. That double damages it. When we're stressed, it affects the heart. When we're worrying about something, it affects our stomach. That's why when we're super worrying about something, we don't feel like eating. And when we're sad, it affects our lungs, so you don't want to smoke. If you're grieving specifically. So you want to get some fresh air and, you know, just learn to breathe again. Because I'm also addicted to like following like philosophers or people write self-help books and all that. And especially on Instagram, I like it because they have their own podcasts and videos and you pick up on stuff. Like I was watching, like I think 4 months ago, this one guy had a breathing technique to kind of trick your body to reset to like balance, a balanced state. So you could probably be happy again. And I'll teach you right now. You can try with me if you want. All right. It's 2 quick breaths in the nose and a calm exhale out. And do it 2 or 3 times, and you could start negative feelings go away, and then your baseline balance, and you could feel a little bit better. So you can hear me do it once. It's just like that. And do it like 3 times. It's cool. You can try with me. So I'll do it in 3, 2, 1, go. 3, 2, 1. A little bit quicker. One more time for a good time. So you feel it slowly builds up, whether you believe it or not. It also depends on your health, but the nasal system and how fast you breathe. And sometimes we only breathe through one nose at a time. One side's for you need energy. One side is you need rest. And then when you breathe out from the mouth, it helps all the extra air go out. Because you don't want too much air coming in from the mouth that's not filtered and fills in the lungs. Right. That's extra stress. So there's a little science behind our mental health and our physical health. That's what's got me thinking when you said, you know, your mental health and your mind and body, it is all connected.
Yeah.
So it's important to take care of everything.
Yeah, which, yeah, I think a lot of people, they think that's just a metaphor, mind, body, soul. No, it's all connected. Like, again, what affects your mind can affect your body. What affects your body can affect your mind. And anyone who's seen my physical transformation these last 4 years, well,
which is amazing, dude.
I can attest to that, because I mean, not to get too personal and dramatic, but just anyone who knows the story of my marriage, they know how much that impacted me mentally, and it showed physically, because I was not in the best physical health during those 9 years. Yeah, 9 years, and that was because it was building up all that time. But then when that part of my life ended, and I was still holding on to a lot of that anger and grief that I put myself through, with having gone through everything that I went through, which, anyone that wants to hear the full story, if you're, you like hearing about that kind of stuff, I'll say morbid curiosity, probably the best way I can describe it. I mean, I'm not afraid to talk about it, but just in the moment, I'm at a flow right now, so I'd rather talk about that another time. But
no, talk about when you want. I love this confidence and this sense of peace I've seen you become, and the strength, because you have look good, dude.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. But just, I guess when I finally have found the right, I guess, courage to finally let go of it, because it was like a period of, like, it was like a couple of months that, you know, that where we weren't 100% sure that we were done, and then it was a couple months after she had left, and but again, we were just not sure yet, and we had not told anyone yet. But then I went to my family's house, like a cousin's house, during a hurricane at the time, to seek shelter, and she had posted something on her Facebook during that week, kind of out of anger, because we had had two cats at the time and I was not able to take them with me to my cousin's house. They were safe, thankfully, but she had posted something about that I had abandoned the cats, and used the specific words, my soon-to-be ex-husband left our cats behind. And that's when everybody found out. It's one family friend had seen that from her, reached out to my brother, then my brother reached out to my mom, and then my mom asked me, and it's like, okay, well, I guess now I got to tell everybody. And it was in that moment that I was still holding on to a little bit of just, that anger and bitterness, and that's very, very slight bit of hope that things could work out. But then that's when I finally started to let it go little by little. And then I would say maybe COVID is when I finally let everything go, because that's when I started to have that physical transformation slowly but surely happening. But that was also because I was working at the hospital up there during the height of COVID. And I was doing the COVID testing for a lot of people, and then eventually was doing the vaccine for them too. And just, I would say maybe probably I guess I could say like the dopamine effect that I had of knowing that I was doing something to help the community, help me build that confidence. And little by little, it manifested into the physical transformation of how I look now.
No, that's good.
Because at that point, I think I was at the height of the weight that I was. I was like just a little bit close to 300 pounds at the time. Mm. And my last doctor's appointment that I had a month ago, it was a cardiology appointment. Nothing to worry about. Just, finally got good health insurance. I mean, and I'm catching up on a lot of things. And when they weighed me, I was 160, I believe, like 160, 162 ish. So it's like 100 pounds or whatever that I've lost. And man, I'm still working on the rest of the physical part of it, trying to lose what little bit of belly fat and try to tone up a little bit, build muscle at this point now. But just, once you let go of the things that are holding you down mentally that have manifested into physical, physical stuff like that, because I had a lot of health issues. Like, I mean, some of it I still have lingering. Like, I have a bad hip that I've been meaning to look at, but I had two bad knees that happened during those years. Like, I tore both of them, but never got proper treatment for them. So I'm dealing with that. But And I know the weight definitely did not help for that. But then my knees don't bother me as much now, which is good. Nice. My hip, mostly it's because I tend to lean on my right side. So that's my own doing for that one.
I lean on my left shoulder a lot and I create problems from an old injury there. It's a habit. I was like, oh, I'm doing it now.
Yeah, especially at work, because I stand around a lot and I tend to like lean up against the counter or something else. Like I'll say, like the way I'm sitting like right now, it's more or less how I would be.
Mm. But that's a bad habit because your nerves for your legs coming from your lumbar region. And when we lean, you kind of do that.
And I'm also right-handed, so that's probably why I tend to favor my right side like that. And but yeah, once I finally let go of all of the feelings that I had for her, towards her, and everything that had happened during those years, and especially during those final months before everything ended, then I finally, I guess that's probably the best way I can describe it, I finally embraced myself and learn to love myself again.
That's good, man. That's huge. Because it's hard. Loving yourself is hard when you're going through something where you're with someone and, you know, someone you love, spend a lot of time loving them, because who we love tends to reflect, they tend to be like a emotional mirror to us, you know? And then if someone's lost, what they say, like how she made that post about the cats, you know, sometimes there's an unresolved issue or a relationship breaking apart. Sometimes people take a dig at us. And I know in my own experience, when there's something unresolved and then for some reason, doing the right thing to work it out or talk it out is off the table. And it's someone you cared about. And then they take a dig at you in some shape or form. For some reason, it always felt like it was my fault and I deserved it, or whatever I did, this is more of what I deserved, or bad karma. But in truth is, we can only do so much, and we can't control other people. We should not control other people. We can just control how we respond and accept things and put out. So we have to realize that sometimes other people are not as kind as how we are doing to them. Cause even you said you had some hope. And maybe they know that, but whatever it is, it's not our fault. Someone makes a dig at us when hopes of fixing things is gone or fixing things is off the table. It's never our fault for other people's actions to take a dig at us. And we shouldn't take that with us to heart too hard, you know? And that's a hard lesson to learn. You just kind of got to go through it, and hopefully someone will remind you, okay, it's not my fault. I did everything I could. Or if you didn't, maybe there is something you could do. And if you can't, go for it. But if not, you got to relearn again and love yourself again.
Yeah.
As long as you try and do your best to be good.
And I just want to say, nothing wrong with having hope in your life.
Oh, yeah.
Just remember that hope is not like your car keys.
Oh, no! Oh, man. You ever fought a hippo?
Everything came full circle with that. Full circle. There you go.
Oh, dang. I was supposed to do a little show on my series about that on my channel, but maybe later.
Yeah. I really wanted to go to that when they announced it last year. I was so mad that
I was hoping to see so many people there, but seeing as the tickets were limited and everyone's from everywhere.
Yeah, when I saw that it was limited and it was so close to when it was happening that when they announced it, it's like, oh well, damn, like if you had given me like maybe another like couple of months notice, I could have taken the time off work to do that.
Right?
Yeah. I mean,
it would have been nice.
Yeah, I had the extra money at the time. I could have you know, spared like, you know, a quick Airbnb for a couple of days to go out there. Yeah, but it's okay. But
one cool thing is I did see faces of people who seemed like really toxic and looking for a fight in person. But it was exactly as I called it along. I forgot. Maybe it was on a Go Deep show or some of those podcasts. But I thought that all this stuff is petty. And if people met in a real life situation, they would just have eye rolls and then just whisper to each other. And that's all that happened. It's like people can talk and be so mean, but in person, they keep it to themselves. So I'm thinking, social media, people are doing what they wouldn't do in real life. That's mean. I don't know. I thought that was telling. And after that, a lot of problems I had or felt or what people just kind of diminished, because it's like, you know, in the end, it's not really that horrible how people behave. Or no, it's horrible how people behave, but it doesn't feel like they mean it as much as they advertise it to, for whatever content of cloud right. or whatever they want. In real life, they don't do nothing, no. which is good. They shouldn't, because, you know, negativity shouldn't escalate to harm to people. I don't believe in that. Yeah. You have a negative opinion, you can hate me all you want, or you could agree with me all you want. Love me, like me, it doesn't matter. Not like me, whatever. As long as people just keep the peace, do what their thing, don't hurt other people, that's fine. Well, not, you know, verbal abuse is still bad.
Yeah. And
that always escalates into something, because one of the greatest shows I went to, because Hana Kimura, she committed suicide
yes.
from cyberbullying, like 2 or 3 days after we got the announcement of Snyder Cut coming out. So it was my birthday. I was celebrating that weekend, got the announcement, and then she took her life. It was like happy, happy, and then sad.
Yeah.
And I just realized that, week, that we, yeah. yeah, we had like, it feels like, okay, we got some, but there's this message of mental health that I hope we don't forget. And I feel like a lot of people are obsessed with getting what they want. But anyways, I got to see Kitsune Wrestling, which is American and Japanese women's wrestling here in LA. They're going to have their second show in March. But I got to see my favorite female wrestler, Konami. And I don't like autographs, but I got one from her because that's the only way I could get a picture with her.
That's
so
cool.
I'm actually against autographs. I didn't even get Zack Snyder's. I just think that's weird to me. Because I consider myself a director. I'm not going to get something from another director. But no. Seeing her was great. And the show was run by one of the people put together was Hana Kimura's mother. And at the end, they did a beautiful tribute to her. I cried. In fact, maybe that's up there for the top shows I've ever been to, even though it's indie. And it gave me a lot of hope and beauty that, you know, bad things happen, tragedies happen, but if we learn from this and strive forward and keep shining and encourage other people who are trying to do the same, I mean, I think that's how we probably heal and prevent worse stuff happening. So yeah,
that's a beautiful sentiment and beautiful way to close out this fun conversation that we've been having.
And yeah, man, it's good to talk to you, man. I'm so glad we got to do this.
I know, like I said, it's been way too long, and let's not take too long to do this again, because this was a lot of fun. Yeah, you know, especially like I would love to come on to your channel and
hell yeah,
do some gaming happen, stuff. Dog. Yeah, I want to do some gaming stuff with you, especially with 2K24 coming out in a couple weeks. That'll be a lot of fun.
Hopefully I can get it. I've been kind of poor this year, but we'll see.
I get it. Funds have been a little tight for me too.
Haven't got Tekken 8, and I'm like, oh, I want the deluxe version, and it's $80.
Yeah, because the last new game, like new game that I got, because I'm not The Last of Us Remastered, that's different, and I only had to pay a $10 upgrade since I already own the physical PS4 version.
Oh, nice.
But the last new game that I got, which was actually was really more of a gift for my brother. I got the Spider-Man 2 as a Christmas gift that he just gave, you know, through Zelle, gave me the money to buy it for me.
Hey,
so, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a fun game. And I think you haven't played the Spider-Man games yet, right?
Not yet. I want to, because I like Miles Morales a lot.
Yeah. That's my boy. You'll have a lot of fun playing those. Yeah, because I've played all of them so far. And I know there's the new game plus update coming for this one in a couple weeks, too. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Hey, that sounds cool.
Yeah, but yeah, that's and I guess before we wrap things up, where can people find you on your social media?
Instagram, you'll get a lot of my point of views, Free Palestine especially. And that's more like check this out. I don't know. I post a lot of what I think there everywhere else too, but also for more entertainment fun and what I think it's YouTube. So Instagram, YouTube, those are the best places to find me. You can find me on Twitter. I kind of vent on Twitter, but I always stay in my own lane because I don't like going to other people's lanes and ruining their day. I'll just use it to say what I think and feel. Share this, check this out. So yeah, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, that's my main hub. YouTube, okay, I think it's YouTube, Instagram, then maybe Twitter. Barely on there. Very, very on there. Deviant Art. I've barely been on that one. But yeah, that's where you could find me if you want to.
And I can put all the information on the description for this one.
Okay, those top three.
Yeah, and also I'll have if I've had it for less however many years, the Autumn Snyder tribute fund from AFSP. That link is on there too, so you can donate to American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. They'll help get creating and funding the resources for mental health awareness. It's very important cause to me and has been for a very, very long time. And yeah, like I said, let's do this again very soon.
I'm looking forward to it, man, and I'm glad we got it down today. This is great. This is a gift. Thank you for having me, bro, and thanks for being a friend over these years.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much to him for coming on here. Like I said, it's been a long time. Been trying to get him on here, and eventually you can catch me on his channel. I'm gonna work things out for that, and all of his information, check him out. His links will be down in the description for y'all to check it out as well. You can follow him on Instagram and Twitter and YouTube and wherever else. And want to reach out to me, as always, you can do so. My Instagram, Threads, Vero, Snapchat, TikTok is all on there as well. And you can also check out the Minutites Podcast store, my eBay store, my Poshmark store. All the information is down there. And you can also check out my past episodes of the Minutites Podcast and my interview with Soda that I have on the last episode, and other people that I've had on here, Venom Vlog, Sean O'Connell, Allison Crow, and so many other people. And you can do so by subscribing to the Man of Science Podcast either on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, so on. All the links, again, in the description, in the show notes for y'all to check it out. And, thank y'all so much for watching, for listening, for subscribing. And if you're not subscribed, again, just please do so. The little button's right there. It's right there. Just click it. Just clickety click click. And I love and appreciate every single one of you who have watched and listened and subscribed to this show for all these years. And hope you all are doing well, staying safe, staying healthy, taking care of yourselves, taking care of your loved ones, being the beautiful people that I know you all are and that you can be. And this has been the Men in Tights Podcast. I am Julian. And I will see all of you on the next one. Bye-bye.